Hey, Josh Jackson from WRTI here. You know, jazz is best when it's shared, and The Late Set is here to share it with you every other week. But public media doesn't run on ads, it runs on people. And with federal funding going away, we are turning to the people who value this space the most, and that's our listeners. That's you. Your monthly gift is what keeps this show fresh, fearless, and full of discovery. So take a second, pull out your phone. You're probably on it right now anyway, for real, and make it happen. WRTI.org, big old red donate button. You cannot miss it. Or go to the WRTI app. The work we do is because of you. The Boulevard of Linden. Welcome to The Late Set from WRTI. I'm Josh Jackson.
And I'm Nate Chenin.
Nate, I just had a momentary flashback of my senior year of high school when The Low End Theory came out and Check the Rhyme.
Such a great track.
Blew my mind.
Such a great track. Yeah. And the version that we just heard is by our guest this episode, drummer, producer, rapper, band leader, Casa Overall. And it's a track from his new album, Cream, brand new on the Warp Records label. And yeah, he's tipping his hat and tipping his ride cymbal in the direction of A Tribe Called Quest, but also the source material.
Bass in these headphones stinks. It's way more bumping than this.
Back in the days on the Boulevard of Linden, we used to kick routines and the presence was fitting. It was I, the abstract,
and me, the five-footer. I kicks the mad style, so step off the Frankfurter.
Yo, Fife, you remember that routine that we used to make spiffy like Mr. Clean?
A tidbit, a smidgen. I don't get the message, so you got
Check the Rhyme.
And in 2025, we are, you know, we look back on this album as a landmark.
Huge. Really.
I mean, you know, you and I came up with it as just like a cool record. And with hindsight, you're like, this was actually like of huge cultural importance.
Yes.
Q-Tip, what an incredible, like, crate digger and assembler and visionary of just putting stuff together, you know?
I loved this record, Low End Theory, just because the previous one, People's Instinctive Travels, was also really great, but I felt like Low End Theory is when Fife Dog really kind of like stepped into it.
Yeah. So obviously Casa Overall is paying tribute to A Tribe Called Quest and to Q-Tip and Fife Dog with this version of the tune. But he's also celebrating the sample that Q-Tip pulled, which, if you don't know, now you know, it's Average White Band.
But there's another piece at the top of this tune that's the guitar hook.
Sorry.
In the Weeds with Josh Jackson and Nate Chenin.
So that's a cool thing that Casa's doing here.
Yeah.
And it's the whole record. This album is a celebration of the hip-hop tradition of incorporating these samples. He's playing the sample, but he's also playing the hip-hop produced, interpolated product of that sample. And so it's all in the mix.
Yeah. So my question to you, as someone who's really good at words, is it fair to call any of this like pastiche or collage, or what is this? Blenderized?
I don't know. I mean, it is so fully postmodern, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like a comment on a comment on a comment.
It's meta, man.
It's totally meta. But the beautiful thing is, you know, Casa overall, who has been engaging with the sort of jazz meets hip hop conversation for a long time and doing it in lots of creative and very personal ways. He brings so much heart and joy to this thing that there is no point on this album at which you think like he is, you know, being arch or showing you how clever he is. It's just like, man, isn't this cool music? So he was in Philadelphia recently.
Yeah.
He performed at Solar Myth, and our friends at Ars Nova Workshop let us post up there. The late set had a conversation with Casa. It was myself and our evening jazz host, Nicole Sweeney, who is a deep lover of classic hip hop. Not just classic, but I think she's got a special place in her heart for this era, you know, this sort of 90s hip hop vibe. And she loves tracing that sample trail. So we had a really fun conversation right before the band hit at Solar Myth. And we're excited to bring you that interview in just a moment. But first, why don't we get a taste of what the music actually sounded like in the room? It was an incredible show. And we're excited to share this little taste. This is a bit of the title track, Cream. Welcome to The Late Set from WRTI. My name is Nate Chenan. I'm here with Nicole Sweeney and the great Casa Overall.
What's up,
Casa?
Hey.
What's up, man? I'm doing good, man. Running around, you know? Back to running around.
That's right.
So we are on stage at Solar Myth, just moments before your album release show for Cream, which is a pretty remarkable record.
Thank you.
Nicole and I were just talking about it. And like, it feels like a flip side of something that you've been investigating for a long time.
That's right. I've been saying recently it's a mirror image album of all my other work so far. When I first started making my own albums or my own, in charge of my own albums, I was like, man, there's so many different ways to connect these genres of music besides the ways that we've been doing, besides the obvious way. And there's nothing wrong with the obvious way. You know, there's nothing wrong with taking a couple chords and looping that up and playing a hip hop beat over it. You know what I mean? That's kind of like our way into a hip hop jazz fusion kind of a thing. But I think because I've not only been chopping up beats for many years, and writing rhymes and studying lyricists and playing gigs on drums for many years, I think that I started to go like, but yo, there's so many other ways to connect these musics that are connected, that are the same ultimately, you know? So even on my other albums, the idea of, you know, rapping over a ballad, but leaving the ballad instead of chopping it up.
Hate to sound as though I'm complaining about my life. I'm on the TV, but there's poison in the bright lights. I got a tambourine, but I'm not a tap dancer. I didn't fit in Wakanda, I'm not a Black Panther.
You know, it was kind of like the same, like, thought experiment. So this is like, okay, well, let's just actually go backwards. So let's take hip-hop as the material, as the information source, and let's apply all our aesthetic, you know, inclinations and abilities to make a record, you know, that you would call a jazz record, a record that sounds like it could have came out in the 60s, you know, which is even before some of those samples that the hip hop artists sampled is, you know, some of those were 70s and 80s. So, yeah.
It's interesting, in listening to the album, I kept saying, wow, these songs sound like they were composed by Benny Golson or Jimmy Heath or Wayne Shorter. I mean, they have got the straight ahead element all up and down and through it. But then there's something that catches my ear and I'm like, wait, I love it when you call me Big Papa. Of course. I often say that hip hop is my best friend that introduced me to the love of my life, which is jazz. I'd love to know your relationship with both genres individually and collectively, which I think really leads us to this album.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's all interesting. So for me, hip hop became popular in the world stage as I was coming into the world. You know, I was born in 82. So 86, 88, 87. I'm, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old. So hip hop was like my music. It was like, that's me. You know what I mean? It's like, we're going into the world. But my dad and my mom and my brother, who played, he's 4 years older than me, he played drums. So they all were like, here's Kinda Blue. Here's Now's the Time. Here's Giant Steps. Here's Eddie Jefferson. You know, here's Moody's Mood for Love. And like, so all of that stuff was right at the beginning for me. You know, as I'm learning to speak English, I'm learning these elements. And the strange thing about it, because there's also this social and cultural element. The strange thing about it is those two things just were like separated. The metaphor I've always used to describe it is like two trees that grew up. And then as I got older, the branches started to go like this, right? But there's another one I've been thinking about recently, which was like when you have magnets and on one side, they come right together, right? But then when you put them like this and they don't want to come together, that has been my experience with hip hop and jazz in the world, because there's just certain elements of rap, hip hop, electronic music that just, they just don't want that on the festival. You see what I'm saying? Like, nah, like, not the auto-tune pedal, you know? It's like, nah, 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 nah. And then when it comes from the jazz side, similarly, it's like, there's just it has to be a certain thing to work in either one, you know? And so being somebody that just wants to make stuff and wants to be an integrated, creative person, I'm not feeling that, you know what I mean? So I'm pushing back against that, you know?
I mean, do you feel that there is also a complicated interaction between, you know, hip hop as a musical form and jazz as a musical form? Because you've gotten under the hood. You know,
yeah,
like
right.
You've really like worked with the substance of both.
I really don't. That's the thing is, I don't think that there is a complicated interaction or the integration of the two. I don't think it is really that complicated. You know, like when you look at it from the perspective of African rhythmic DNA, you know, I got that from Nick Payton. But where you have this rhythmic language all the way from West Africa through Pan-African, you know, through all the different diaspora and all the different genres in America up to today, you know what I mean? They all line up. The way that Andre 3000 raps lines up with the way that Coltrane plays, lines up with the way the lead djembe plays when you got the West African, like, djembe. I went to Gambia to study for 2 weeks. And we got to study with a master, and I'm playing the Dune Dunes, holding down the beat, and I'm just hearing the patterns they're playing. It's like exactly the same language. Not like, oh, that's kind of similar. That was a Neptune's beat. You know what I mean? It was like, and it was like, and the way the people in the crowd, the way the people reacted, it was the same reaction, you know? And that's so when you're dealing with it like that, then you're like, okay, so the differences are like kind of surface, you know, the kind of patina differences, you know, so.
Well, so a quick story. in June, just a few months ago, I was in San Francisco for the SF Jazz Festival. Mm. And I was excited to see you. Didn't know what you were bringing. And you hadn't announced this album yet.
Right.
And I was there. I have a good friend named Jeff Chang, who is a hip hop scholar. Mm-hmm. He wrote Can't Stop, Won't Stop and a bunch of other things. And so Jeff lives in the Bay Area and I was hanging with him. And he was like, oh, yeah, I want to see Casa. I found him on Spotify or something.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you're going to like this. So you hit with your band, and I think you might have opened with Freedom Jazz Dance.
Yep.
And within a few minutes, or sorry, a few bars, Jeff goes, oh, Far Side. And I'm like, no, Miles Davis, like Eddie Harris. We were basically both responding to familiarity with what you were putting together. And we were both right, of course. Mm-hmm. But I loved that moment because he was coming at it from his expertise. I was coming at it from mine. And your music, the way that you arranged the material, really allowed for those multiple points of entry.
Right.
And it struck me that, like, maybe that's, you know, a big part of your intention with this particular album.
Absolutely.
Is that the case?
Yeah. And that's also part of my intention in general. Mm-hmm. You know, like, even when I'm making a record, I'm very detail oriented. So I'm making a record for all the heads, right? For the three of us listening or having a certain conversation with the music. Like, oh, that little intricate bit. But I'm also making it for, like, the Gen Z kid that knows nothing about it at all. And it's like, let's make sure it hits, or let's make sure, you know, if I'm dealing with lyrics, like, I don't want you to have to have done homework to dig it. I want you to dig it, and then you dig it so much, and then you start feeling like, what's going on? I don't know everything that's going on. There's, what's going on here? And then you can dig further, you know? So I think that it's important to, I don't know, reference is just like a huge part of music, you know? Like the idea that everything we're making kind of comes from somewhere else. And most of the time we're dealing with harmonic language that's been developed over time and rhythmic language that's been developed. And you can try to approach it from nowhere. And then you go hear Sun Ra or you know, and Roscoe Mitchell, and you're like, oh, man, they've been on this, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you can't come from nowhere, you know.
I was curious to know how you selected the music for this album. There's so many different hip-hop songs that you could have taken and spun. I can imagine there is a reason for every single track, including Back That Ass Up.
Absolutely.
I need some detail
for sure
on how that one made it to the album.
We've been talking about, because a lot of this music can easily be played on jazz radio.
On the straightest ahead
and
of jazz radio.
I was saying to Nicole, how are you going to back announce Back That Ass Up?
Yeah, well, technically it's A-Z-Z. So
right.
You could say Back That Ass Up and nobody's
got to work on that pronouncer.
That Back That A-Z-Z Up.
That's a good one.
I think that, and this is again, it's funny when I'm talking about this record, so many things are actually like just principles through all of my work, but it's all of the references are personal things so that when I'm working on the music and playing the music, it triggers an emotional thing. Like we play Big Papa, I think about seventh grade. I think about when Art got in a car with my brother. Art was my brother's friend, and he hopped in the car and he says, yo, this is Biggie Smalls, like put this in. And my brother had a bazooka tube in his Honda Civic, you know, the sub bass, you know. And so I think the tape had Big Papa and it had something off of Me Against the World by Tupac, you know. And like the way those bass lines were hitting and were just driving around, like, I just thought that, like, I don't know. I thought that my whole world changed.
So there was no East Coast, West Coast feud in that car?
No, no, not in that car, you know. And honestly, we never, I don't think we ever really fell into that. We might have fell into who do you like better, you know, Tupac or Biggie, but this was also a little bit before that, yeah. But yeah, man, and like, when I think about Wu-Tang and how it shifted my perspective, when I think about each one of those things. So the way I picked the songs was I just thought about things that kind of excited me emotionally. And then the other element was like how we were talking about those magnets. It would have been easier. It would have made a lot of sense to do like Diggable Planets, Tribe Called Quest, The Far Side, DJ Premier, Nas, like
the obvious
kind of jazzy hip hop kind of, you know what I mean? Dilla, right? But the thing about that is that like, that's just one little bit of rap. And the reality is the beat that Manny Fresh made for Back That Ass Up was actually had the most harmony of all of those joints and was original with no samples. We think about Cash Money or we think about Dr. Dre. And because the music is coming from a rawer place and the topics and that kind of thing, we don't think of it like high quality art. You know what I mean? Like we don't necessarily draw from that the same way because it's like, it's almost those parts of the rap world are almost like it can fall into a joke space or like a, you know, like.
Well, that's interesting because, so that makes me want to hear what you have to say about this sort of last, you know, 10, 15 years where Kendrick Lamar and Terrace Martin are taking G-Funk and bringing out all of the, you know, the musical complexity in that form and kind of foregrounding it in a way that, I don't know if that's bringing like respectability
point.
to that historical genre. You know, you think
exactly.
About G-Funk in the 90s, I think you're absolutely right. But it's interesting to think about what's happened in this last several years, right?
Yeah, it's like case in point. It's like, what is the outgrowth of G-Funk? And then you go TDE, Kendrick Lamar, throw Anderson .Paak in there. So now you're dealing with the live elements. But if you zoom into what Dr. Dre was doing, he was bringing in live musicians and, you know, his production style, he was very intricate, you know? So even though he's up there talking wild, they were taking that stuff very, very seriously, you know? And I think that that's just a good kind of wisdom thing to think about when you're looking at the way a thing evolves. Because it might start off like this, but then a person's life or evolution of what they're doing can grow into so many different things, you know, because whatever Kendrick Lamar is doing might inspire a philosopher that changes our whole world, right? But somehow Dr. Dre is connected to that, you know, and so it's just kind of that holistic, you know, as one people, we can't just take only the ones that are, you know, it's like you got to take them all and understand we're all like complex individuals and we all have like, you know, helpful things, bad things, and we all, you know what I mean? It's like that oneness, I think, is powerful.
I think of Wayne Shorter when he said, jazz means I dare you. I feel like this album, you are so very daring on it. And as I was listening to Check the Rhyme, I was like, is this McCoy Tyner's Passion Dance? Am I mistaken? Was that where you threw Passion Dance in there? And I was like, of course that works. Talk to me about even just that process. Was that something that came to you? I mean, you're very intentional. That is, that's no secret. But I'm so curious to know where you heard Passion Dance as you're checking the rhyme.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like experimentation, you know, because if you listen to the beat, you know, that horn sample, but debi debi dum debi dum bump bang, but debi debi dum debi dum bump bang. I guess sometimes when I'm hearing, I can also hear it just more from a kind of rhythmic space or a melodic shape space, because I'm not really like, I'm not all that harmonically advanced in terms of knowing what each little thing is, but I could hear that rhythm and the shape connection between that line and bi-di-bi-di-bi-di-bi-da, bi-di-bi-di-bi-di-bi-da-di, you know, the downs and ups. And so it just kind of was like, yo, could we go into Passion Dance? Like, what if we just did a little descending thing and we tried it and it just worked perfect. I don't think that people necessarily thought it would work, you know? Even a lot of the kind of demos and sketches I was coming up with, I don't think people really got it until we went back in the control room and listened to it. And they're like, oh, nothing but a G thing, but like Wise One. That's such a dope idea. But like, but they didn't, we were literally recording it and I could tell they were like, so you, this how you want it? I'm like, yeah, man, I'm telling you, trust me, you know? And like that one, and also Back That Ass Up, like Back That Ass Up, but like Someday My Prince Will Come meets Take Five. You know, like you could type that into, like, you could almost like type that into an AI, you know? And it's like, bop, bop, bop. And you're like, that sounds crazy, you know? So I think that's there's a lot of humor in it too. There's a lot
perfect
of
perfect,
like,
illustration of proof is in the pudding. Yeah, this record.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Now, this is a killer band, first of all.
Thank you.
I think that seeing your gig in San Francisco was my first time seeing Matt.
Yeah.
And he has to do a lot in this band.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And so can you talk about how this personnel makes it possible for you to make these connections?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Matt, I'd say Matt is like the right-hand man for this record in terms of the band, because I'm a drummer. So I have some ideas. He can help write out the charts and all that thing. And then like a couple of the songs he actually co-arranged with me. So he, you know, brought in some new harmonies and new things like this. But having a piano player that's also a writer, arranger, orchestrator type of person is like a super powerful thing, because as you have ideas, you can ping pong it to him and he can, oh yeah, but you know what we should do, if we can go around and come back out in this 2-5 and da 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 and end up in G, you know what I mean? And so like he definitely was extremely helpful in that process. And then yeah, I mean, a lot of this band has been part of my touring band for the past few years, you know. Emilio Modeste is a little bit newer, but I've known him since he was a kid, like showing up at the Zinc Bar with Kojo, and Benji Alonso on percussion. He's been with me for I don't know how many years, but like we've developed a language on tour that really makes it easy to have a sketch idea, but then like we have our way of communicating, so it's easy to get to something, you know. Matt has historically played synth bass in my band. Mm-hmm. And to Makai McRaven's complaint, you know, he's like, man, I just need a bass, I love it, but I just want to hear that bass. So because this album, you know, when we're talking about making a jazz record out of a hip hop starting point, we started really adding like things that could really lock it into the sound we're going for. So acoustic bass, grand piano, let's get rid of the electronics and things, you know, really like let it be this warm, woody, you know, kind of thing. So the first thing I did was add a bass player, and that kind of opened up the whole palette.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rashawn Carter also is basically my first friend when I moved to New York. You know, I moved to New York and me and Rashawn practiced with Antoine Roney every day for about a year. Like every day, just, you know, in there. And it was hard work, you know, because Antoine really had a high understanding, you know. And so he's another person that's been like a brother, and we haven't toured a whole lot. And now we kind of did this whole cycle and then ended up here in this moment, you know. So, yeah.
Was there anybody in the band who wasn't familiar with any of the original hip-hop songs? You mentioned knowing someone since they were younger than you. Did you have to put any of them on to some of these classic hip-hop songs? Or were they knowledgeable?
I think there was a few. You know, like Benji's older than me, and I feel like all of these, I think he knew them all. I'm not sure about Rashawn. Rashawn's kind of quiet, so if he didn't know, he might have just, okay, I'm going to get it together. Emilio, he's kind of an old man, so he tends to know everything, you know what I mean, like beyond his years. But if I had to call anybody out, I'd probably be Matt. Matt knew most of the things, but he's just, you know, he's like a real inside the piano type. I could be wrong. If you're watching this, man, I apologize.
But we're not trying to call you out.
Nah. But I do know this. At one point, we were doing Aquemini from Outkast, Aquemini, and he put a little chart together. And he said, "Yo, I got the Aquemini together," and I said, "Aquemini." So he didn't know how to pronounce Aquemini. So yeah, I give him that.
You know, with a couple of your other releases, it's been cool to watch the reception that your music has met with outside of the jazz community.
Yeah.
You know, like you've been embraced by, you know, just as a shorthand, I'll say like Pitchfork.
Yeah, and, yeah, some, you know, of the other, like, stuff. Yeah.
You know, the people who are basically into, you know, indie rock and underground hip hop and electronic music, right?
Yeah.
And I'm curious to know whether you are gunning for a different audience with this one. Like, are you wanting to kind of infiltrate some jazz people who sort of were like, yeah, I know Casa's a great musician, but like, I can't
play his records.
I can't get all the way with Animals, you know?
Yeah. This is for y'all. Or I don't know, y'all, no, but not, this
not
is
us.
For not y'all.
I mean, it is for us, but
this is for the jazz cats, you know? I mean, and the reason it's like that, and that's kind of another reason to do the rap cover, to use the rap songs as the basis, because it's not just making a jazz record. It's like it still has purpose in the arc of kind of my world. You know what I mean? And it is interesting, man, because I have people, like I have somebody in Seattle, a radio host, and he's like, yeah, man, they don't, the station manager doesn't, yeah, they don't want to play it. It's like, do you got instrumental versions of like this song? You know, maybe we could play that. And I'm like, really? Like, don't you hear Cat? Like, don't you hear the cymbal beat? You know? Yeah. But it's like, you know, people, like I said, it's like jazz has almost become a texture rather than a process in some spaces. It feels like if it sounds like that, then okay, you know, that could be jazz. And it's a very interesting thing because you could have jazz mixed with chamber music and they'll boom, jazz. They'll play it on the jazz station. Jazz mixed with Cuban music, boom, play it on station. Jazz mixed with, you know, it could be Bob Dylan, but jazz, put it on, play it on station. But you mix jazz with hip hop, which is his literal, which is their grandson. No, you can't bring your grandson. You know he a problem. You can't bring him. But that's my grandson. I can't bring my, you know, that's my kids. No. That don't mix. You know what I mean? And so it just, I remember actually feeling like I feel like a person being divided in half, you know? And so this is like my way of doing something that the jazz world can embrace, but then also kind of giving them a little riddle of like, well, if we could play this, why can we play this? Why should we be able to play this? You see what I mean? It's just an interesting thing to think about.
I say that this album is two of my life's chapters really coming together in one. And I try to get my non-jazz loving friends to listen to Passion Dance, right?
Yeah.
And they're just like, I don't know. But I feel like this is actually an album that I can play
Absolutely.
For them and kind of get them a little closer to jazz through hip hop. But I also feel like this is an album that might have some, and this is a stretch, but maybe some jazz purists listening to some of the original hip hop songs.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think so. I mean, I think the goal is in art for me is to expand people's ears and their palate, you know? And I think this is definitely has some potential in that kind of way. And, there was a thought from the thought from earlier, it kind of popped in my head again, which was like my worlds. I was saying this before, my worlds were separated. So I was doing jazz gigs in middle school. And I also had friends that they would come and they couldn't get into it. Like culturally, they couldn't relate. Like, yo, what? Yeah, I mean, I'm good. You know, you doing the jazz thing, I'm cool. And but they would also be in the basement with me trying to rap. You know, I make beats and maybe I used to write raps for my friends and stuff, you know. So they were all into that. And so for me, I had these two worlds that were so separated. And so this album is also like it allows me to integrate those worlds, you know, because if you can imagine, I had a drum set upstairs in the living room. And a beat machine in the basement. And I didn't sample myself playing drums ever. Because I never would have thought. It's like a thing that it's so obvious that you would do that, but it just was two different worlds. And I couldn't even, to myself, I couldn't even see it.
It's interesting. You said one was upstairs in a room and the other was in the basement. It almost is like a mirror of how jazz and hip hop is, right?
Yeah.
Jazz is up in this room and hip hop is down here, but there's such a stronger connection.
Yeah.
Jazz and hip hop should always meet in the living room.
They should meet. Yeah, they should meet in the living room. That's right. Yeah. And you know, it's all good. The thing about it is there's always part of the thing is that there's work to do. Like part of the problem is also the solution. Like the problem of it is what allows us to even want to strive to, you know what I mean? So it's all good. It's all natural. It's just a product of history and how this all grew. But as time moves forward, we just keep finding new ways to, you know?
One last question for me. You talk about that separation and how you've now integrated.
Mm.
But I'm wondering, is there a future version of this project where you are spitting again? Because
sure.
That feels like the next step to me.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I don't think I've what's the word? Like I haven't really like seen it in my mind yet, but I do think that's definitely en route. We're en route eventually. You know, I was with Gary Bartz and we were playing. And I was just so high off of playing tunes and stuff with him. I said, man, I think I just want to do this. You know, I was like, man, forget all the beats and stuff. I'm going to just do this. And he was like, man, do that on this. You know, because he's 80 something. And you know how Gary gets down. So he's almost like, bro, you can spit over this, you know. And I'm like, oh, man. But you got to see it. Before you can go make it, you really gotta like, so it's coming, you know, eventually.
It's interesting because Gary's been sampled.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
Yeah, that's a hip cat right there.
Gary's prototypical in this conversation.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for this conversation. It's a real treat. And on behalf of everybody at Solar Myth, I mean, we're very excited to help you usher in this album. You know, as we're speaking, it's just about to drop.
Yeah.
When this episode comes out, it will just have dropped. So I'm excited also to see what the ripple effect is going to be when it's out in the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm excited, man. Go cop that. Go pick up Cream, Mel.
That's right.
It's out now.
Thank you again for being on The Late Set.
Thank
we
you,
really
Tessa.
Appreciate you, and we appreciate your time, man.
Man, thank you.
And
glad to be here.
Appreciate the music. Thank Indeed. You for doing this album. It's such a necessary set of music, and so many ears are going to be appreciative of both sides coming together the way you did it. So thank you for Cream. Cream Part 2? Am I hearing that coming up?
Let's do it. Let the people decide.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
And that was a conversation with Casa Overall and Nate Chenin and Nicole Sweeney, part of our collaboration with Ars Nova Workshop and WRTI, recorded at Solar Myth. Speaking of, if you happen to be around Solar Myth on the 20th of September, I, Josh Jackson, will be having a conversation with Mary Halverson. It'll be the first time I get to talk to her. I'm pretty excited about it.
That's going to be lit.
How was this conversation? Pretty deep, I heard.
What I love is that Casa is, you know, he's not like overthinking anything, but he is thinking deeply about all of it, you know, and he's really sort of puzzling it out. It's like what's the best way for me to flip this? What's the best way for me to dig into it? You know, and he's clearly got a really good thing in his current band. Matt Wong, who I saw for the first time this year, is just an incredibly resourceful pianist and arranger. He's got Rashawn Carter on bass and Emilio on saxophones. Wow. You know, he has been making the rounds with Stanley Clark, with others. You know, he is just a commanding voice, getting better every time I see him, really.
Yeah. Thank you, Lenny White, for helping.
Yeah, seriously. And, you know, it was cool because, all right, this album, which they played, you know, from top to bottom, they've been doing that on this tour. It is, in a certain sense, it's a concept record, right? But they really go bananas with this music. I mean, they attack it with the ferocity and conviction and like love of like a classic John Coltrane quartet. You know, it's like that spirit is somewhere in this music, even as he's playing a tune like Nothing But a G Thing, you know? And the crowd, you know, it was a packed room and people were hollering. You know, it felt like, I feel like, especially in Philadelphia, when you can credibly access some of that classic Coltrane quartet energy, this is a town that is ready to meet you there.
Yeah, they will respond. Props to you and Nicole Sweeney for an excellent job at Solar Myth. By the way, great to have Nicole on The Late Set, and she's on WRTI Monday through Thursday evenings from 6 to 9 p.m. You can listen locally at 90.1 FM if you have what they call a radio, or stream us at WRTI.org or your mobile app.
Heads up, she's going to try to find a way to play Back That Ass Up on the air.
I'm okay with it.
I'm looking forward to hearing how she announces it.
Yes, indeed.
Well, now is the time in the show that we like to call This I Dig. I love that this segment is torture for you.
It is.
Time.
I mean, you know why? Because, Nate, you know this. It's just a fire hose of stuff that is coming at all of us, not just you and I, but everyone, everywhere, all the time. And so, you know, to sort of, with intentionality, land on anything in particular and hold it in my hand for a little while, it gets harder and harder to do the older I get, I think.
This is why it's important, because you got to stop and smell the occasional flower.
Okay. Well, in this case, I'm going to go for fauna over flora.
All right.
And I'm going to select the theme song for Joan Duran. Do you know who this is?
I don't think. Oh, wait. Yes. Yeah. This is a member of the Phillies squad, right?
Yes, he is the closing pitcher. He's the closer now. And we got him from the Minnesota Twins. And I say Fauna because his nickname is the Durantula. And there's this incredible scene that happens when he comes in just before the ninth inning to close out these games. Ring that bell. Oh, yeah. That's the old bell from Veterans at Citizens Bank Park ringing. That, my friend, is El Incomprendido with Daddy Yankee's Hot.
I mean,
that's the walk-off music.
That's the
walk-on music.
A rock star entrance.
Yeah, that's the walk-on music for Joan Duran, the Phillies closer.
You've been in the park to witness this a couple times, right?
Three times now.
All right.
This thing is so popular, Nate, in Philadelphia that. You know, typically they cut away for commercial breaks in between innings, but everyone is so hype over this that NBC Philadelphia, when they broadcast the games, they have literally rearranged their sales schedule so that they run this because everyone wants to see this, and they changed all their sponsor packages.
Yeah, yeah,
that's money.
That's it. You know?
Yeah.
Can't argue money. With a hit.
Yeah, exactly. Daddy Yankee, Hot. Yeah, that's my jam now.
All right. You heard it first. Josh Jackson. Pull quote.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my turn. As this episode goes out, we are celebrating the 2025 WRTI Fall Preview. We've put one out for jazz and we've put one out for classical music. On the jazz side, we are showcasing more than a dozen concerts in the Philadelphia area, the greater Philly area, and, you know, really great stuff coming, including this concert that you're going to be at, Mary Halverson. And I just want to single out one pick from this list because it's also from an album that is releasing this week. This is Cecile McLaurin-Salvant's new album. It's called Oh Snap. And she will be performing at the Zellerbach Theater, courtesy of Penn Live Arts, on November 2nd. She'll be on tour elsewhere as well. This album is yet another kind of jaw-dropper, I think. It shows her flexing in a bunch of different ways. It both is and is not a jazz album. And I think it's just an encapsulation of like how free her imagination is. You know, she's just like, she's going to follow her curiosity wherever it leads.
I love it. Wide open.
Yeah. So yeah, this is Oh Snap. Why don't we hear a bit of the title track? There's so much great jazz happening around Philly. The tricky part is keeping track of it all. Well, we've got you. Every week, we send you a hand-picked list of shows, concerts, and must-hear events. It's called Moments Notice. It's free, it's easy, and it's your guide to the best live jazz in town. Sign up now at wrti.org/momentsnotice. Your guide to Philly jazz at a moment's notice.
The Late Set is a production of WRTI and made possible by WRTI members. It's hosted by me, Josh Jackson, with Nate Chenin. And also, this episode, we're including our friend, WRTI's evening jazz host, Nicole Sweeney.
The show is produced by Alex Arif. This interview was recorded by Bo Gordon with assistance from Jacob Savitt. Our episode was mixed by Robbie Webb.
I want to thank Mark Chrisman at Ars Nova Workshop and Lauren and Lydia from Team Casa, as well as the folks over at Warp Records.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can also watch the conversation. We taped it. Go to the WRTI YouTube channel to catch that and other performances and interviews across both the jazz and classical landscapes.
We'll be doing another taping at Ars Nova this coming Saturday, September 20th. I am talking with guitarist Mary Halverson. And our next episode features a good friend for both of us, trumpeter Terrence Blanchard, who is also the executive artistic director of SF Jazz.
Robbie Webb is our assistant production manager. Our operations and production manager is Tyler McClure. Associate general manager for content and programming is Josh Jackson. Bill Johnson is WRTI's general manager.
Stop by WRTI.org to see and hear everything else that we're doing in Philadelphia and all around. And hey, we'll see you soon.